Good morning, everyone. Nice to have you here. Okay, case number one. 11-2289, Burnett versus the United States, and it's Ms. Kunicki. Did I say that right?
Wow. Good morning. I'm Assistant Judith Kunicki. I'm here today representing Mr. Eric Burnett. This case is before the court on an appeal from a denial of a habeas. At issue specifically is whether or not counsel was ineffective in failing to file a notice of appeal on behalf of Mr. Burnett.
I want to ask you right off the bat, is there a chance that Burnett could have received a higher sentence on appeal and remand?
No, there is not, Your Honor. 50 months is the statutory maximum.
Okay.
Based upon the Strickland standard, as this Court is well aware, the counsel's performance, if it falls below an objective standard of reasonableness, is deemed to be ineffective. The second prong of that is that it must have prejudiced the defendant. Both prongs are present here in this case. The prejudice is that Mr. Burnett was totally denied his appellate proceeding. Now, the district court, during the habeas proceeding, heard evidence from Mr. Jones, who was counsel at the lower level. The facts of this case support the finding that counsel was ineffective in failing to file the notice of appeal. Counsel met briefly one and only one time with the defendant for 5 to 10 minutes prior to the revocation hearing. During this time, Mr. Burnett asserts that he told counsel that if he received any sentence above the 6 to 12-month guideline range, he wanted to appeal.
So let me ask you a question about this. I take it it's your position that even if Mr. Burnett had said to his lawyer at the time of the sentencing, I don't want to take an appeal, that there is still that period of time afterwards while a notice of appeal is possible that he might have changed his mind and wanted to contact counsel. Are you making that argument?
We are, Your Honor. Pursuant to the Supreme Court's decision in Roe versus Flores-Ortega, we believe Mr. Jones had a constitutional duty to consult with Mr. Burnett to see if he wanted to pursue an appeal.
What do you think constitutes adequate consultation regarding the right to appeal? In other words, what do you think what do you think a lawyer must tell the client?
In my practice, I tell each of my defendants, I send them a letter saying, you have an absolute right to appeal. I believe you may have this appellate issue. You may appeal this issue.
You think that's required besides the fact that you do it?
I believe it is required.
Okay.
I believe that every counsel has a duty to inform their client of their appellate rights and whether or not they believe there are any viable issues for appeal.
Even if you were to send that letter and say, but in my professional judgment, you don't have any arguments that are reasonable for appeal.
Yes, Your Honor, and I do often do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also tell my clients that there's a specific date you must tell me, yes, I want to appeal, or no, I do not. In this case, there was a total lack of any type of consultation, and it's extremely problematic in this case because the defendant here could very well have wanted to appeal. He got the maximum sentence, a sentence four times greater than the guideline sentence, and a sentence far in excess of what the government would be.
So his only beef is the sentence, not anything else, as I understand it. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. In your view, we should send her back down for resentencing and a hearing before resentencing?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the relief you're seeking?
Yes, Your Honor.
I would imagine the relief would be just the resetting of the clock, basically, at this point, so that counsel can then take the appeal and the two sides can brief the question whether the sentence ought to be reduced or not. And then only if that later appeal is successful would he be resentenced. I didn't think you were asking us to
jump right
to the end.
That is what we're asking.
Yeah.
However, if the court would, from its review of the record, determine that the trial court was not correct in its assessment and wished to send it back for resentencing, I believe that would be very agreeable to my client.
I'm sure it would
he
be.
Has served almost all of his sentence at this particular point in time.
Right. I understood your brief, actually, though, to be asking just for the more modest,
that is
if
correct,
you will,
Your Honor.
Relief. Yeah.
Basically, Mr. Burnett is asserting that he was denied his right to an appeal. problematic in this case if the court, and I would ask the court to review the record, because the testimony of Mr. Jones seems to indicate that he was not aware that he could not terminate his representation of this client without an order from this court. He seemed to be woefully unaware of the procedures of the district court in sending a copy of the judgment and commitment order to the defendant, and he seemed woefully unaware of the fact that the defendant himself could not file the notice of appeal, that he had an obligation to at least file the notice of appeal and then motion to withdraw with this court. It seems to me that Mr. Jones in this case was ineffective on very many fronts. He had no file on this case. He had absolutely no notes. He had no correspondence with this defendant. He was unavailable after the hearing. He had left no contact information with this defendant, never sent him a letter with letterhead, never provided him with a business card. He admitted all of these things on cross-examination. Mr. Burnett had one 5 to 10 minute meeting with this attorney, and that was the sole sum of this attorney's counsel with Mr. Bennett. I think everything in the record indicates that even if Mr. Jones believed that Mr. Burnett had not requested an appeal, he was ineffective in failing to consult with Mr. Burnett to see if he wished to file an appeal subsequent to that.
What portion of his sentence has he served? Just remind me.
I believe his outdate at this point in time is August of this year. It appears he may have gotten a 6-month reduction from drug treatment. That's my assumption. I don't know that, Your Honor. But it would account for the 6-month discrepancy in the sentence.
Thank
you. That is what BOP has listed. I have nothing further the court has questions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Cudgeon.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Cutchin. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I do represent the government.
So what's the government's position about what constitutes adequate consultation regarding a right to appeal?
Well, Your Honor, I think the Supreme Court was quite clear that it depends on the circumstances. I don't think the court specifically rejected a bright-line rule in any case saying this is what an attorney has to do. So I think you have to look at the circumstances as a whole.
Does an attorney have to say to the client, you have a right to appeal, or write it, say it?
Well, the court indicated addressed that and indicated that the attorney does not in every situation. For example, as we have in this case, where the district court adequately explains to the defendant his right to appeal, then the attorney, under certain circumstances, doesn't have to. The Supreme Court said that in Roe versus Flores-Ortega. In this case, in the record, you'll find that Judge Gilbert, as he always does, adequately went over with the defendant the fact that he had a right to appeal in this case.
But he has a right to appeal with assistance of counsel, and it seems to me there's a gap here that's illustrated by Mr. Burnett's the testimony from Mr. Jones, that's in the record, where he's discussing his conversation with the girlfriend, and he says, but I told her that he had a right to appeal, and if he wanted to appeal, he had to do so right away and file a motion to proceed in forma pauperis. It sounds like Mr. Jones is talking about steps that Mr. Burnett has to take. I don't see a hint in this of an indication that Mr. Jones is ready to help him do that. It sounds like he thinks Mr. Burnett has to take all of these steps pro se.
Well, Your Honor, the very next question and answer, I think, addresses that. He was asked, so you didn't feel an appeal would be successful, but you fully indicated you would follow your ethical obligation to file a notice of appeal, and the answer is that's correct.
Well, but how could he do that if he doesn't have a conversation? And I looked at that part of the transcript, and it just doesn't, it just doesn't seem to be there.
Well, Your Honor, the district court, again, the district court explained to the defendant that the defendant had a right to appeal his conviction, and
no,
Mr. Jones' testimony.
That's kind of an abstraction when you say you have a right to appeal to somebody who has no idea how you go about it.
Right.
Your Honor, I understand that, but What we have here in the testimony that the district court credited was the fact that Mr. Burnett never made any effort in order to contact.
But how could he if he had no idea how to do it? That's why I asked the question about that critical time period between the end of the proceedings in the district court, the pronouncement of sentence, and the time during which an appeal has to be filed. That's changed over the years, but whatever that time is, because if the lawyer is completely unavailable to the client, how can there be any consultation? Well, not a phone number, not a visit?
Your Honor, I certainly understand the court's concern, but part of the problem we have here is that the defendant never raised these kinds of issues below. He raised a single issue in his 2255, whether, despite being instructed to do so, that Mr. Jones never filed an appeal.
But I think this is encompassed within it, because your position seems to be that if there's a brief conversation at the conclusion of the sentencing, that exhausts the lawyer's responsibility. And I don't believe that's the case.
No, Your Honor. My position is that I agree with the district court. I don't think the record supports that the defendant ever made an effort to contact the defendant. Remember,
but the
he
record
testified.
Does support the fact that it was impossible to do so. So why do we need this extra sentence in there saying, you know, I didn't contact the lawyer because I couldn't? If the record shows that there's no phone number, no business card, no address, no nothing.
Your Honor, what the record shows is the defendant falsely claimed, according to what the district court found, that he told the attorney to appeal and the attorney didn't do it.
Well,
the only testimony that the defendant wasn't, that the lawyer wasn't available either to the defendant or to the girlfriend comes from the defendant, again, who the district court has found that the testimony is not credible.
Burnett would have to have been a totally irrational human being, which it doesn't seem he was, not to want to appeal his statutory maximum sentence, because he absolutely gained zero for giving up his right to have
and Mr. Burnett
a trial.
got his $1,500. I mean, it's a really nice compensation for 10 minutes of time. $1,500?
Your Honor, the first thing I would say, that judge from our perspective, a defendant oftentimes would appear that the more time that they get, the less they would be happy. I can tell you in the supervised release context, for handling these for 15 years, many times the defendants are more interested in getting off supervised release, having no term to follow, than they are the actual length of time that they serve. But there's another thing that's missing from the record here that I think indicates that the district court's finding was correct, and the fact that Mr. Burnett never contacted Mr. Jones about an appeal.
If it's missing from the record, how can we consider it?
Well, I think you can consider its absence, if the court would permit me to finish the thought.
I will. I'll let you.
Thank you.
Where do you think you are?
The defendant, here we have the defendant's testimony. He was so interested in trying to perfect an appeal that he told the attorney twice to appeal, that he got a hold of his girlfriend, who the girlfriend tried to contact him to file the appeal. But yet he doesn't file a 2255. He makes no effort to contact the court to say my rights are not being protected until over 11 months.
How sophisticated do you think he is?
Well, he's sophisticated enough to file a 2255.
Well,
if he was thinking that his rights had not been afforded, I would suspect that he would have done so far before 11 months
after. Maybe he learned in the prison about it. We do have in the record, so you didn't send him any copy of his judgment? No. You didn't send him any advice of appeal rights? No correspondence whatsoever then following the hearing? No, that's correct. So we do have something in the record about that.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, I think the record would also support the fact that the defendant was not a newcomer to prison. This was his second revocation. He had been on his original sentence. He had been on his revocation sentence. He would have been well aware.
Some people are very slow learners.
That's true, Your Honor. Your Honor, again, it comes down to the fact that we have the issues that the defendant raised. We don't have sufficient facts in the record to support the conjecture about what the defendant did or did not, was able to contact him or not able to contact him. The issue that the district court had before it and that it granted the hearing on was the limited issue of whether the attorney had been told by the defendant to appeal, and quite clearly the judge found that he had not been. Again, in this proceeding, it was the defendant's burden, the defendant's obligation to raise these issues. He did not meet that obligation or that burden. Therefore, we think that, based on the record, that that the only action the court can take is to affirm what the district court's done.
Thanks a lot. Do you have anything more? How much time do we have? 3 minutes.
Just briefly, I want to remind the court, and as you said, Judge, he had no paperwork. He had nothing to work with to prepare 2255. My experience is once they get to a facility, they get with a jailhouse lawyer who they have a form that they fill out, and that is what they go from. But with any lack of any paperwork, he was limited as to what he could actually set out in his 2255. I would also note that I do believe we raised these issues fully and established a record in lower court with regard to the lack of consultation or any type of follow-through by this attorney. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You were appointed, weren't you?
Yes, Your Honor. This actually isn't my case. I'm filling in for someone, but yes, we are appointed.
Well, thank you for the fine job you did for your client, and thank you, Mr. Cutchins, for the fine job you did for the government.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay.